You're listening to BitTalk, a podcast about Bitcoin, money, freedom, and the ideas that matter. I'm Mike, and I'm here for the signal, not the spin. A significant quiet milestone was just reached. The 20 millionth Bitcoin has been mined. That's over 95% of the entire supply that will ever exist. This isn't just a statistic. It's a live demonstration of a monetary promise being kept by code, not institutions.
Hey, I'm Lauren. And while that number ticks up with predictable glacial slowness, just look at the news. Central banks are still debating how much more currency to create. It's the ultimate contrast. Unlimited printers versus an unbreakable 21 million cap. Today, we're breaking down why this hard-coded scarcity isn't just a feature, it's the core shield for your savings.
We'll start with what this 20 million milestone actually represents. Then, we'll get into the gears of the protocol that make it immutable. After that, we'll contrast it with the mechanics of modern central banking that we all live under.
And because this is BitTalk, we won't stop at theory. We'll connect this directly to what it means for you as an operator. How to think about self-custody, network participation, and why this property makes Bitcoin uniquely resilient.
Lauren, let's anchor this. 20 million Bitcoins mined. The common reaction might be, only 1 million left. But that's misleading. Can you frame the time involved here?
Absolutely. It's not 1 million left to go in a short sprint. The last million will take over 100 years to be issued. We're already in the long, flat tail of the supply curve. The next halving in 2028 will drop the block reward to about 1.95 BTC. This is the algorithm doing exactly what it said it would since 2009.
This predictability is what's revolutionary. Every other form of money in history has had its supply schedule subject to human discretion. Kings debasing coinage, central banks expanding balance sheets. Bitcoin's supply schedule was set in stone at the Genesis block. The 20 million is just a public, auditable checkpoint proving that schedule is being followed.
Think of it like a cosmic clock that everyone can see, ticking at a predetermined, slowing pace. While we watch this clock, we see headlines about M2 money supply, quantitative easing, and debt ceilings, all mechanisms for changing the rules of the financial game. Bitcoin's fixed supply is the rule that cannot be changed.
So this milestone is a trustless audit. It confirms the system is operating as designed. But how is that design enforced? That takes us to the consensus mechanism.
Right. It's one thing for Satoshi to write 21 million in the source code. It's another for that to hold firm for 17 years across a chaotic, adversarial global network. Mike, break down the enforcement mechanism.
The enforcement is distributed across the entire ecosystem. First, the nodes, tens of thousands of independent computers running Bitcoin software. They all validate every new block against the consensus rules. If a miner tried to create a block with a 100 BTC reward, every single honest node would reject it instantly. The invalid coin would never enter circulation.
And the miners are economically incentivized to follow the rules. Creating an invalid block is a waste of immense energy. They wouldn't get paid. Their profit depends on producing blocks the network accepts. It's a beautiful alignment. Greed secures the protocol.
Compare this to a central bank. A governing committee meets behind closed doors and can vote to increase asset purchases or change interest rates, effectively creating new currency. There is no distributed network of validators that can stop them, only political pressure, which often fails.
This is the operational takeaway for anyone listening. You can be one of those validators. Running a node is the ultimate way to personally verify the scarcity. You don't have to trust Coinbase or a blogger. Your software will tell you if the 21 million rule is being broken.
And the mechanism that controls the flow of new coins to that 21 million limit is the halving. It's the heartbeat of Bitcoin's monetary policy.
We just had the fourth halving, dropping the block reward to 3.125 BTC. Mike, put Bitcoin's current inflation rate into perspective.
Gladly. Bitcoin's annualized issuance rate is now under 1%. It's already scarcer than gold in terms of new supply flow, and it's programmed to asymptotically approach zero. Now, look at the Federal Reserve's long-term inflation target. It's 2%. Their goal is devaluation that's twice Bitcoin's current maximum new supply rate.
And that's just the target. The actual tools are expansionary. Quantitative easing is a euphemism for the central bank creating new bank reserves to buy assets. This increases the money base. Fiscal deficit spending often leads the Treasury to issue bonds that the banking system monetizes. This isn't conspiracy. It's standard modern monetary policy, and it dilutes the purchasing power of existing currency units.
This is where it stops being academic. That dilution is a silent tax on everyone holding dollars, euros, or yen in a savings account. It pushes people into riskier assets just to preserve wealth. Bitcoin's predictable declining issuance is a fixed schedule you can plan against for decades. It doesn't respond to election cycles or banking crises.
The promise has held through it all. The 2011-2012 European debt crisis, the 2020 pandemic stimulus, the 2022-2023 inflation spike. Through every macro event that prompted central banks to do something, Bitcoin's issuance schedule didn't flinch. It just kept ticking, halving on schedule.
Which brings us to the so what. If this is the superior monetary property, how do we interface with it correctly? Because holding a Bitcoin ETF share doesn't give you exposure to this property in the same way.
Mike, we need to be clear here. There's Bitcoin the network, the decentralized protocol with fixed rules, and there's Bitcoin the asset, the units of account on that network. How do we engage with the asset without undermining the properties of the network?
Self-custody. Holding your own keys in a hardware wallet or open-source mobile wallet means you own a share of that immutable, scarce asset on the network. You're not holding an IOU from an exchange or a derivative contract. Those counterparties can fail, be hacked, or impose restrictions. The network cannot seize your coins.
This is the critical separation. Trading futures or using high leverage on a centralized platform is a bet on the price of Bitcoin. It's a financial derivative that often involves creating synthetic supply, the exact opposite of engaging with true scarcity. It introduces counterparty risk and volatility that has nothing to do with Bitcoin's monetary properties.
For those who want to go further, run a node. It reinforces the network, allows you to verify your own transactions privately, and is a direct, non-financial way to support the system that guarantees the scarcity we're talking about.
It boils down to this. You can't benefit from a hedge against central banking if your exposure is mediated by the very financial system you're hedging against. True exposure to fixed supply means taking personal responsibility for custody on the base layer.
So, to bring it home, the 20 millionth Bitcoin is a testament to predictable algorithmic scarcity. It's enforced by a decentralized network of nodes and miners, cemented by the halving mechanism. This stands in stark contrast to the discretionary, expansionary nature of central banking.
This isn't about hoping for a price to go up. It's about choosing which set of monetary rules you want to live under for the long term. One set is written by committees and changes under pressure. The other is written in code and runs on math.
We've been talking about Bitcoin's fixed supply as a protection. Next time, we might dive into what this means for its role as a potential unit of account, or how mining security evolves as issuance declines.
Thanks for spending time with us on BitTalk. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep stacking knowledge.